Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Going fantastic. Oh, there's dog hairs on my microphone.
Whose fault is that?
Not mine.
Not mine. Blame the dog.
There we go. I blew that too hard.
Do you need a minute, Derek? We've only been trying to start for half an hour, and now you realize, there's a dog hair.
Well, I got nice and close to the microphone talking. It was like, whoa.
Did it tickle your nose, Derek?
It was very fine. I think it was a cat hair.
Dog hair, cat. How do you not know the difference?
I just made a determination.
Oh, my God. The people I have to deal with every day. Speaking of having to deal with people.
I know.
You know who we have to deal with tonight on tonight's episode?
I don't know. Who?
Kevin Callen.
Was he on tonight?
He's on tonight.
Oh.
I am looking to him right now. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm always on, man.
On what?
Something.
Tea something right now.
How you doing, Kevin?
Good. I've got a moose hair on my microphone.
How do you know it's a moose and not like a deer or an elk or something?
Because it's a little chocolatey. It looks like moose.
Oh. No, chocolate moose.
Could be kangaroo.
Oh, kangaroos. Wild kangaroos.
Anyways, how's it going, Kevin?
I'm good. Really good. Yeah. Life is good. The ice is breaking. And midges are flying around here. So the black flies will be soon. So, yeah, life is good.
Oh, so Derek's going to be hibernating soon because the black flies are coming out.
Yes, exactly.
So we got a couple things to talk about tonight. And one of them is somebody has a new book out.
I know, another book. Number 20, by the way. Number 20.
Wow.
And it's different than your regular books, too.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a children's book. And over 2 years ago, my daughter, that's now 20, going to university for English Lit. I looked at her and went, what? You don't want to be a writer. No, Dad. You don't make no money. I don't want to be a writer.
Dad.
No. And so she said, yeah, your 20th book, you should do something different. You should do a kid's book. And I said, why? Well, you've always told great stories going canoeing. When she was a kid, we'd go across a big lake. I would tell her a story about spitballs attacking a castle with frogs and things like that, just to get across the lake. And I said, okay, I'll do a kid's book. And that same week, actually, there's an illustrator, Cliff McCardle. I was worried about saying his name wrong, but it's Scottish, McCardle. And he happened to just send me his social media page of illustrations he made of Jim Baird, of Adam Schultz, Justin Barber, just cartoon depictions that were really cool. And then one of me. I went, oh, thank you. That's kind of cool. And I'd like to have a copy of that. And then I contacted him and I said, so what's all this about? Like, what? And he was an illustrator for TV, cartoons and stuff. And he just, his hobby was doing this because he was a big canoeist. He loved tamogamy, loved paddling, and it was a big thing, right? And then he went, you know, and rambled on about, well, rambled on. Jesus, like, I rambled on. But he started talking about he wanted to write a book about kids in the woods with high anxiety. And how being in the woods on a canoe trip helps cure anxiety. I went, wow, I love that idea. I think that's an incredible idea. And then he said, yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I could do all the illustrations, but I can't write. I need a writer. I went, you got yourself a writer.
Cool.
So, yeah, I said, okay, let's put this head forward. So we did what's called the blues. It's a sort of a thing and put to the words to the publisher, and I went to Firefly, and you know they're my main publisher, and I said, okay, what do you think? They really liked it. They loved his illustrations. Like, when you see this book, this guy's good.
Right.
He's really good. Right. Unique too. I'm not talking about AI stuff. I'm talking about unique. Nobody else could do what he does. Right. And then they liked it, but they couldn't grasp. And it took a while. They actually really looked at this book for several months and thinking back and forth. But like, yeah, we don't get this whole idea about. If it's sellable, about kids going off in the woods to help anxiety, I can't see the selling. I went, really? Mm-hmm. Really? And then we went to Scholastic and a bunch of other publishers because, again, they really liked his stuff. So they looked at it. And that was a big thing to get into Scholastic. Like, that was a big meeting. And, yeah, sure enough, their answer was, yeah, I just don't get the concept. We can't see this selling. I just got frustrated over a year and a half, or a year, whatever. And I said, you know, Cliff, I believe in this. You believe in this. You believe in high anxiety being cured in nature. I personally believe it. My daughter had the idea. I'm going to self-publish again. And I did self-publish a couple other books. One was Once Around Algonquin, and other was another Bend the River memoir. Right. I went, well, let's just do that. And he goes, well, you know, he's never written a book before. He's never dealt with a book before. He goes, how does this work? I went, well, that's a lot of work. So I contacted my designer that designed all my books for the last 30 years. And she was, yeah, this is fantastic. Jill Steed, and then Kathy Fraser, my editor. I've worked with for many, many years, and she was behind the project. And I went with Ingram Spark. So I did, you know, at that time, you think about it, it was just the beginning of let's be Canadian. Let's make sure everything's Canadian.
Right.
So at the time, I looked at Canadian printers. They're not publishers. They're print-on-demand printers. And the one, that, the main one in Canada was noted for the under the Better Business Bureau as not being ethical. Yeah.
So you authors. Picked that one.
Yeah, so I learned so much. I became such a business person doing this because I'm not a very good business person. I'm a good creator. Most artists and creators are not good business people. But I thought, well, I'm not going with them. And then Ingram Spark, which I dealt with before, the problem is they're American. At that time, I don't want to do American. And I'm not knocking. Well, we're not even going to go there. But I'm not. At that time, all people were buying Canada, right? But then I found out, okay, well, actually, they are an American company, but when you order the print, so let's say you're on Amazon.ca and you order the book, it's printed in Winnipeg.
Okay.
Yeah, so, or if you're in Australia, it's printed in Australia, or in the UK, it's printed in the UK. So, well, I'm okay with that. Like, that's a trade. That's fine. That's a happy medium. And I know that they did a good product because I already worked with them. So we went ahead and did that and designed the book. But also, it was a kid's book. So this is where it gets really confusing. It color and, you know, how it looks is really, really important. So that ups the money. And I started panicking. And when finally the book came out, I was putting orders out and stuff like that. And then people at Amazon, like scam artists, were mm-hmm. buying the book and trying to sell it for hundreds of dollars. How can that happen? How can people actually do that? And I get so upset. And I contacted Amazon, contacted Ingram, and they said, well, you're they're third sellers, and they can do whatever they want. Like, if people want to pay that money for your book, I went, no, that can't happen. That's not what it's sold. It's supposed to be sold for $19.95. And oh, well, they can do whatever they want. I went, yeah, the world is evil. And sure enough, I did everything else. And they said, well, you have to get a lawyer. You have to prove that actually you are the author and the publisher of this book. Because what I did is I created Kevin Books. So I'm the publisher, right? I don't have money. Like maybe a major publisher would actually just throw lawyers at them, right? And I couldn't do that. And I just said, you know what? Nobody in the right mind. Like, really, Derek, are you going to buy one of my books for $397?
No, I'm not.
Not a third time. Not a third time.
No, so I sort of went for a walk in the woods. I said, calm down, Kevin. These people will be shut down and everything else. And sure enough, everything's calming down. Even though Amazon.ca now is still kind of doing that, like the prices mm-hmm. are kind of weird, but it will be settled. And wow, I just, it's nicer just to write a book than try to sell it on your own, man.
Here's my book. You guys just get it out there and make people buy it.
Oh,
nothing. So, I'll just sit at home and collect the royalties.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, I'm going off in great tangent about the whole process of the book. And then I had to again go for another walk in the woods. And actually, Christine and my daughter even reminded me, like, Kevin, reread your book, how important it is. And you guys saw it, and it's all about, you know, Paul being high anxiety, not wanting to go out. He doesn't want to go on a trip with Uncle Roy because, you know, he's afraid of bears, afraid of bugs, bad weather. He's afraid of his phone not working, doesn't want to go. And then you would think that it would be Uncle Roy that would teach him his ways, and that would be too easy. It would be too easy for Uncle Roy to do that. So Uncle Roy is just the catalyst to get him out there. That's all Uncle Roy is. And he's this goofy guy that just says, oh, I'm going to take you on a trip because I went on a trip when I was a kid. And then what happens is the animal creatures, you know, they're like, oh, humans are here again. Oh, we got to help these guys. And then the animal creatures are helping Paul learn his skills, be comfortable out there indirectly. Paul doesn't know that, but you see these animals. And then, sure enough, halfway through or even that, and you see Paul, he's got a hoodie. And this is a great story I haven't told anybody, is that one of my colleagues, when I taught students at risk, she contacted me today. She goes, I saw your book, Paul with a Hoodie. That's one of your students. I went, yeah, you and I taught him 5 years ago in class. She goes, I know, I won't say his name, but she goes, that's where you drew that character from? Yep. And because he always wore the hoodie, and all of a sudden the hoodie came off. I remember that. We're out in the woods doing species ID, whatever, and halfway through the semester, he didn't wear the hoodie anymore. And when you read this book, you'll see Paul's hoodie is removed when he all of a sudden has an epiphany that he likes it out there. He's mm-hmm. not challenging nature, but he's thriving in nature as opposed to surviving. And he really likes it. And in the end, I won't give too much detail, but he doesn't want to go home. So the idea that it's not that he cured anxiety. We always have anxiety. Like, I'll always have anxiety. But to go in nature, it calms you and you become your true self. And that's what happened to Paul. He became his true self. And actually it was Uncle Roy that was the catalyst to get him out there. But it was the animal creatures that actually got him to feel good about himself, mm-hmm. about his skill. And that's what the book's about. And it's goofy. And I don't know. Well, you guys, you saw it.
Oh, I could tear this book apart. Actually, Uncle Roy reminds me of my Uncle Buck.
Okay.
My Uncle Buck had the long hair and the big beard and everything as well, right? Big into the outdoors, fishing, and all that sort of stuff. A Spark of Courage is the name of the book, written by Kevin Callan, illustrated by Cliff McArdle. And like I say, it's a different type of book than you've done before. And you know what? You have been a big proponent of getting people outdoors. And I think we agree that getting kids outdoors only helps them, right? And the back of your book, on the back cover, says, Paul is certain he's not going to enjoy camping trip with Uncle Roy. After all, it's just him and his uncle and all that wilderness. No friends, no phone, just crummy weather, biting bugs, endless paddling and portages, sleeping on the hard ground, and the possibility of bears. But little by little, Paul starts to enjoy himself, feel more confident in his ability to thrive and survive the challenges of the great outdoors. Maybe Uncle Roy is right. Spending time in nature can help you find your own true self. And that's what it's all about. And I think we can agree, if you can get the kids out there earlier, then it's going to help them discover who they are, who they can be, calm down. And if they are, you know, they, like you say, with the anxiety and everything like that, it'll help them.
Yeah, your own true self out there. Like, we're all born for wilderness, right? Mm-hmm. Every culture, unless we're aliens put here, I don't know. But it releases that feeling when you're out there. And not the first day, not the second day, but the third day, fourth day, whatever, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm okay out here. Mm-hmm. I feel comfortable. Why? It's almost like you belong to the womb of Mother Nature, right? Yeah. You reconnect. And I've seen that years and years of all my experience taking youth out. And I just wanted to write that and say, okay, this will happen to Paul. We just have to show it. And there's subtle hints in there about etiquette too. I mean, there's a bunch of signs. There's one page with a bunch of signs on the portage and
yep.
etiquette, don't poop on the portage. I remember one person that was looking at the book they were like, this is really good, Kevin, but really, do you need a sign saying don't poop on the portage? I went,
yes.
You would be surprised.
This is written for a kid, right? This is written for a kid. They're going to laugh. And sure enough, Christine's grandchild, he was going through it. And that's the first thing he picked up on is poop. And then there's also a page showing all the gear that you have to bring. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, the first thing he picked up, like Finding Waldo, was toilet paper, right? Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in that book. Really, some weird stuff.
And there's an Easter egg in the book, which I totally missed, but my daughter found. There's a book So there is the three main animals that help him out, the bear, the squirrel, and the fox. And the bear is reading a book. I'm not going to tell you what it is.
You'll but he's on a thunderbox.
But he's on a thunderbox reading a book. And my daughter pointed it out and screenshot and go, and sent it to me. So if you want to know what that book is, you're going to have to buy the book and check out what the book is.
Yeah.
If I can say book one more time.
I'm going to book you a book one.
But just to get back to this for a second is I know and have been on trips with kids who are Paul. Everything is, well, we're at my I have no internet. I can't play my game. My battery died. How do I recharge it?
100%.
There's bugs. I'm going to stay in the tent. No, I don't want to come out because there's bugs. And once they get out there and they realize, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
But it's that initial getting them out there.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah.
I do like the fact there is a lot of knowledge imparted in the book along with the here's how you get through all this and that can help you. But he's learning, and like you say, there's equipment, rapid classes, like classifications, canoes, paddle strokes, starting a campfire. And I still want to know who gave the squirrel the knife. That's all I'm saying. Knots. This would be a good book if you're reading, like the parents are reading it with their kids, to read that. There's a couple sections there. With the rope.
Yeah, yeah.
And practice knots.
But there's knowledge to be gained in the reading of this. It's not just for entertainment. There's some learning to do. It's like sneakily teaching kids things.
Yeah, you sneaky teacher. And, like, this would also be a good book for not just kids, I don't think. I think there's some adults that would read this book and
it's right in my wheelhouse. It's big pictures, few words.
I think it's a bit above you here. Let's not overreach here, Pally. I think that. I mean, how many adults do you know still watch cartoons?
Oh, right, yeah. This guy.
Yeah, I once said this game is good for ages 5 to 12. I'm still playing those games, whatever. But I think some adults would even benefit from this book, not just for, I mean, yeah, it's geared towards kids, but I think adults would could benefit from this book as well.
Yeah, it was hard when, because when you write a kid's book, you have to sort of say the age limit or age range, especially for Indigo, the bookstore, because they, when you go walk in there, they have age limits, the piles, right?
Yeah.
And we said, like, you know, grade 6 to no grade I you know what I even forget it was from age 1 to 12 whatever but I said, you know, I guarantee that the adults will get this book and say this is a good book, but they're getting it for themselves. And it happened to be that just today it came out, it was released today, and the sales, I looked at the sale thing and the reviews. And their adults were buying it for themselves when they had a grandchild. So they haven't even had a grandchild yet. They were getting this book for themselves.
Well, Tracy has mentioned that families that we know, there's a couple of them with birthdays soon. So a couple books will be being bought.
I'm doing the same thing.
And I said, yeah, you tell them if they're nice. We know the author. Maybe we'll get it autographed for them. but yeah, it's, I think a lot of adults will buy it as well. And like you say, that's a great, you know, come sit on grandpa's lap and let's look through this book, which then leads into, well, we're going to go on, or let's come over, sit on Uncle Roy's lap. We'll go through this book. And then next summer we're going to go on a trip.
And you can see where you go through it several times with somebody younger and you know, like Kevin was saying, like Where's Waldo? It's like you go through the gears list and go through the knots and practice some knots and practice, you know, you can see where each time there'll be some other advancement in the learning process from the book. There's so much stuff in there. I was surprised. Mm-hmm. So it was, it's a learning children's book.
Yeah. And you try and guess who the characters are. So there's the bear, there's the squirrel, and the fox, the main characters. Now, there's the moose and the beaver, whatever. But the main animal characters, bear, fox, and squirrel. So of all my canoe buddies that you've seen on my YouTube videos, who are they? Because they are my canoe buddies.
I would have to, right off the bat, the big huggable one would be Andy. That'd be the big old bear.
Well, the Uncle Roy, he's got such tight belt on, it's maybe that's Speedo Man, I don't know.
Oh, no, the animals. I'd say the old Hyper Squirrel would be.
Hyper Squirrel would be Speedo Man. Maybe.
And if you look at the fox, he looks like he's got a goatee. Oh. Does Tim not have a goatee?
I'm not giving you the answers.
That's what I was saying, because I was looking at the animals there. I'm thinking, yeah, if he puts it that way.
Yeah. I sent it to all my buddies, and they said, I don't get it. It doesn't look like any of us. I went, oh, really?
Who's the queen of denial? Who's the raccoon? There's a raccoon, there's a beaver, there's a moose.
Raccoon briefly makes an appearance.
He's a supporting cast member.
Yes.
Yes, he is. And the moose is wearing a PFD.
Yeah. We saw that. We commented on it when we were discussing it. Yeah, it was. It's very well done, Kevin. I can visualize being an Algonquin. Some of the scenes I can sort of recognize, and it just kind of brings me back to trips that I've done with my kids, type thing. So it's very much like it.
You know, I think it. I know your goal is to help them with their anxiety, getting out there and stuff. And I think it'll, with their confidence as well, when they actually start putting stuff into practice, I think this book will help kids out more than just at one level sort of thing, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, and that was the whole thing too, where I'm not knocking the publishers that looked at it and said, no thanks, because, you know, they have to invest a lot of money into it, and it's a business for them. And I always learned long ago, you don't go to a publisher and say, this is a great storyline. They just want to say, well, how will we make
money? How are we going to make money off this?
Yeah. As soon as you go in the meeting, and I get that, right? But when they couldn't get it, I went, you guys are blind. Are you saying that actually that this is not happening right now, that actually kids are high anxiety more than ever before?
Oh, exactly.
Like, you're blind. And are you blind that they're not going into nature? Like, really? And do you know that parents are upset that they're not going to nature and they're seeing the high anxiety? Like, you're fools. You're fools. And Kevin Kellen books, I'll go for it.
Yep.
And maybe I'll lose my shirt on it. I don't care, but I'll go in the grave knowing that I did something that I really wanted to do and had deep meaning behind.
And I think this is good. I mean, I enjoyed the book, and I'm thinking a lot of kids will get excited about it. And like I say, to test out some of the things, except fighting a squirrel with a knife. That's one thing I'm just going to harp on forever. Who gives a squirrel a knife in a kid's book? Kevin Callan does. That's who. They may be hesitant at first, in like Paul was in the book. But, you know, once they get the hang of it, they're going to find their true selves and be ecstatic. Are either of you two Calvin and Hobbes fans?
I am. Everybody is.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember their vacations?
Yeah, yeah.
It builds character. And this is exactly, Calvin could have used this book.
100%. I agree.
100%, yeah. So if people want to get it, Kevin, where are we getting it from?
It's everywhere. I mean, even though it's printed on demand by Ingram, and I'm the publisher, but they actually, what I chose them for is that they actually send it out to all brick and mortar libraries, schools, bookstores. So yes, you can get it on Amazon, but it's not just on Amazon. You can get it anywhere else. So Canadian Outdoor Equipment, for example, my buddy Tim, a.k.a. the Fox,
I've said too much.
He actually was the first to order it. He really believed in this book. When he saw the sample I gave it to him, he really believed in it. And he pre-ordered a bunch, and I got it sent to him. So he hasn't announced it yet, but I think it's May. Oh gosh, I can tell you right now. We're doing a book launch at his store in Mississauga. Oh gosh, May 4th, and he hasn't announced it yet because I haven't really got. I got the samples yet, but I haven't got the books yet. Everybody else is getting the books. Pragas got the books already, like a few days ago. I haven't even got the books yet. I'm the author. Anyway, well, I've got a sample, whatever. But
you need one.
I don't know what's going on. The world is weird. But anyway, yeah, he's going to do a book launch, and it was released today, but of course it takes a while for it to get shipped. But
yeah,
he's jumped ahead. If you go to his site, what's really good about going to him or Algonquin Outfitters or Friends of Algonquin, probably Friends of Killarney and Killarney Outfitters too, I know them, they'll probably be doing orders, is that, first of all, they'll get it probably before Amazon. I'm not knocking Amazon, but if you want to be more ethical in one sense, go to your local store. If they don't have it, they can get it. They just say, it's Kevin Callan book. It's self-published through England Spark. The bookstore will know who that is. It's a major printing company. Or at the end of the day, just send me a note and I'll stamp my name on it and mail it out to you. So,
really? With a little bonus check? probably a label from an old whiskey bottle. Here you go, right in the middle. There's your bookmark.
I could do that. Right? I was presenting again last week, and I got three bottles of whiskey given to me by my audience. It's really? Terrible. It's terrible. Random people come up and say,
"I don't know how you put up with this, Kevin."
Oh, it's I feel bad. It's like the random, "Hey, Kevin, I like what you do. Here's a bottle of whiskey." And one bottle was, I got home and I was like, "I've never heard about this before." It was $190 bottle of whiskey.
Whoa.
Oh my god!
He really likes what you're doing.
Yeah.
Kevin. Yeah. Wow. See, it, now if you only had the books beforehand.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
You could have been throwing them into the crowd.
No, I really am. I go for many walks in the woods in the morning. It was a lot of work. And when you're dealing with a kid's book and making sure the shadows are right on the rock and making sure the edit is right and is proper, it was a slow process, and I'm really hyper. And I said, "Guys, I'm going on tour," and I did 27 shows in a month and a half, and I spoke to over 12,000 people. And I go, and I don't have a book. I don't have a book, and I just had to let it go because the designer and editor and Cliff said, "Well, it's not ready yet," and I went, "Oh, really?" So. Sorry, I lost sleep on that one. But
seeing the book now, it probably was a good thing to hang off because you got a really good product.
No, there. I did, but no.
Well, you could have asked for just a cover and say, "Hey, this is coming to stores near you."
I did that at all my presentations. Got everybody excited. I did all that, but. You have to be me. It's like you work 2 years on a project, and I've written a lot of books, and I get the process. I understand the process. It's got to be perfect before it goes out, and it's still not perfect. There's a couple of small editorial errors I saw, and it's like, oh, come on.
Squirrel knife.
Yeah. If you look at the back of the book, there's a space between two words, and everybody goes, "Well, we can't put this out yet. Just a space between two words." And I didn't lose it, but I said, "I don't care. I don't care.
We'll use it in a contest later." In the book, yeah. Spark.
The cool thing about it is, though, it's print on demand. So I just said, "Everybody calm down. We'll put the book out and then we'll fix that in a couple weeks and then it'll be fixed." And really, the next, the first people to buy it are not going to notice the space between the two words. Well, now they will because I just said to everybody.
Yeah, what two words? God. I'm trying to find it here.
Jeffrey, who's five.
It's on my. It's actually in my bio. Where is it? Maybe they fixed it. An author of more than 20 books. There's a space between then and 20.
Hmm.
Derek, you would. Yeah, I can see you now noticing that. And you probably won't buy
that. I thought that was supposed to be there.
Oh, man. Oh. And there's also one, but it did get corrected, so I don't think it'll be when people get the book. But the Ojibwe word for the canoe is, instead of canoe, it's home. And the problem is there's five different dialects of that word, so it all depends on... It's like saying McGwitch. Mm-hmm. There's so many ways to spell McGwitch. And they said we should change that. I went, well, I'll change that in a couple of weeks and when we do print a man, but right now, no, sorry, it's going out. So those are the only things I found. Oh my God, I'm sweating right now. I'm like, I'm going to have an anxiety attack.
So for anybody that's out there that's thinking about writing a children's book, be prepared. But you know what though? Like when you start looking at the illustrations and everything,
oh, it's nicely
it is
done.
What you've,
it's
you
amazing.
Said it was going to be.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like really good.
Well, here's the thing about again putting money into it. Like I could have done dull color, like so I did gloss for the cover instead of matte. I also did oh God, I am going to have an anxiety attack talking about this. But I also did a premium ultra premium color, which actually doubles the amount of money I pay per book. So. Basically, I don't make a lot of money off that book, and I would have to sell thousands before I even make my money back. And yeah, the other day I had to go for a walk in the woods. I said, "What are you doing, Kevin? Why?" And why is because if it was that easy to write a book, it was that easy to change the world. Is that easy to get youth out and change perspectives? Is it that easy to protect wilderness? No, it's not.
No,
it's not supposed to be easy, and it's not about money. If there was money to be made in this, the wrong people would be involved in this.
Oh, exactly. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, I think it's good. I think it'll all, you know, like they say, it all happens how it's supposed to happen, and it's out here now. Everybody can go buy thousands, Derek. I mean, just being on the socials the last couple of days, the amount of people that I've heard saying they're going to get this book.
Yeah, it's
I was really shocked with that. I'm the last to realize how many people are out there, my friends. I don't. Maybe it's a good thing, but I really don't think too much about it. And then I announced it, and I love my mother. Way to go! I'm so proud of you, son.
Again, the 20th time. I've been proud of my Kevin 20 times in his life. This is the 20th.
She went into the local store in Milton, the local bookstore, and said, I want to order a book by Kevin Callan. Here's my credit card. It's Evelyn Callan written on it, but don't look at it.
Well, like I said, yeah, it's just our parents that watch this thing, listen to us on here, yibber yabber. No one else, right?
It was actually the greatest excitement is my daughter's roommates are so excited. I'm going to drive down there to Hamilton in a couple of weeks and give them all copies. They're big Happy Camper fans, and yeah, my daughter sent me a note. She says, I'm so proud of you, Dad.
Nice.
And it wasn't proud of, yeah, you got another book out. It wasn't that, because like really growing up with me, yeah, okay, Dad, that's what you do. It was this book that she was proud of. Right, it wasn't a guidebook. She was like, "Dad, you did good," and yeah, because she knows, you know, whether herself or everybody around her, she's young and she sees this anxiety thing happening, and she goes, "Yeah, this is really important." So yeah, that was kind of cool.
Well, when you drive down there with all the books for her and her friends, make sure when you go to hand them, okay, that's $20, please. Can't be doing this for free, ladies.
$25 with a signature.
$25 if you want to sign.
I had to say that to Cliff. So Cliff, again, he's a young guy and he's really excited about this book. Because really, like it's more his book. I mean, his illustrations are amazing, right? And so he goes to make an order. And I went, okay, I'm old. You're not. Let's just chat. All your siblings, all your family are going to expect a free copy. And sure enough, order them. That's fine. But remember, there's a certain point between the second cousin and the first cousin.
Yes.
Okay. If you give 100 books out, you're making nothing.
Yeah.
And all your work is gone. So in theory, your good siblings would buy a book anyway before you actually give them one.
100%.
Yeah. But
and then they phone you up and go, what is this drivel?
Guaranteed.
Right?
Guaranteed. Yeah.
They're not a sibling if they don't.
Yeah, never ever write, especially a children's book, never write a children's book for your friends and family. And never get your friends and family to edit it and design it. Pay for that. I mean, Kathy Fraser, Jill Steed, I've been with them forever. And when it was such a great story, too, because when Cliff was doing all this, he goes, oh, it was great. And I went, no, we need to pay those people to do this proper. Well, it's done now. No, Cliff, it's not. And then Kathy looked at it. She found 53 spelling mistakes.
Wow.
At the first read. And I went, that's why you pay her, not your grandmother. I mean, not that Cliff would do that, but just telling a story. But that's why you pay professionals to do this.
No, that's why I use spell check, Kevin.
No, you need people that you work with and they believe in you and you believe in their professionalism. Or don't do it at all. Like, self-published book, that's the problem. A self-published book, it has that negative view to it. Indigo, for example, they don't touch self-interest or self-published books, right? So for me to get into Indigo is because I also had other books that were published by a publisher and they know my name.
Right.
That's how I got in there. Or on CBC Radio. I'm on CBC all the time. I actually work with them. And then, of course, self-published? No, Kevin. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, we know you. Okay, yeah, we'll have you on. So it's not an easy game. But that's a good thing, because if anybody could self-publish a book, that means there's a lot of garbage out there, too.
Yep.
Right?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I mean, anybody could do a podcast.
And we're prime examples.
And everybody does.
And everybody could do one 478 times in a row.
You've proven your worth for sure. So you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. My bank account differs, Kevin.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, good thing we're not doing this for money,
right? It's chicks, man. It's chicks. Kevin does it for booze.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great. So all the places you get the books, like Amazon, Canadian Outdoor Equipment, wherever you buy books, your book is there. Spark of Courage, written by Kevin Callan, illustrated by Cliff McArdle. Definitely go out and check it out. Not just for kids, in my opinion, or Derek's. And as a person who has actually witnessed it for the first time ever, I can verify Derek did indeed read a book. A Kevin Callan book. Kevin, go get a stamp, a piece of paper, write this on a piece of paper, put it somewhere important, frame it, whatever, because I don't know that'll happen again.
That's upsetting, because I was looking for the moment where he sat on my lap and I read the book to him.
Well, still possible. I said he read it. I just said he read it good.
I've got three of them in my shopping cart right now from Canadian Outdoor Equipment. Hey, it's free shipping after $50.
So buy more. Thousands. How many? You're only buying three? Cheapskate, buy four. I'm there for you, Kevin.
I can always buy more later.
You can always buy more later. All righty. So you going to stick around, Kevin? We got other stuff to talk about here. You might
yeah,
get a,
go ahead.
A kick out of some of this stuff.
Yeah, I'll be in the background and listen up and
And throw in some comments, too.
Yeah, just throw in some comments every so often, too. You're allowed to.
Harass us.
That's bull hooey. Just a reminder, Earth Day is Tuesday, April 22nd. I know we used to just Earth Day.
It used to
be. Oh, no, it was Earth Hour.
Yeah, it used to be a bigger thing back in the day. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it started in the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's still, now, there's still Earth Day. Theme for Earth Day 2025 is Our Power, Our Planet, inviting everyone around the globe to unite behind renewable energy and to triple the global generation of clean electricity by 2030.
And do they define clean electricity?
Yeah, like renewable stuff.
Yeah.
Renewable energy, I guess like wind, solar.
Nuclear. Greenpeace is starting to come around on nuclear. Greenpeace is starting to come around on that one.
Are they really?
Yeah, a little bit.
Do you hear much of Greenpeace anymore?
They haven't been run over by a fishing trawler in a long time.
No. You never really hear about them as much as you used to.
Yeah.
I guess they're not going after the whales as much.
There's a lot more going on in the world right now. I think they're kind of pushed to the like the middle of the newspaper type thing.
Oh, they're not on the front page anymore.
Yeah.
Hmm.
There's bigger fish to fry.
Yeah. Earth Day, Tuesday, April 22nd. Do a little Googling to find out what you can do to help out. Right, Kevin?
Right. Right.
He is there.
He's just watching me like I'm a TV. Hi. Welcome to the 6 o'clock news, Kevin.
The TV's talking to me.
Christine, get in here. The TV's talking to me.
Well, I used to teach a class at the college, environmental issues. It was a debate class. And I'm just laughing because, well, not laughing because it was funny. But so my job was to get an argument going. Right. It wasn't to teach them anything except for them to defend themselves. And Greenpeace is a good example. I would actually show Greenpeace ads. And have you ever seen the one where this young kid is going on a rampage about how you destroyed my earth?
Mm-hmm.
Google it and watch it. It was captivating. It made them angry. It made them sad. And some people even left the lecture hall. And I go, what's my job? Is to deal with your emotions. Now, defend that or not. And then the seal clubbing scene.
Right.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And then, oh, anarchy, right, on both sides. And I love that job. It was fantastic. I would just come into class, well, this is what happened today, and I showed a video clip. And there was one scene where Bambi and Bambi's dad was shot.
Mother.
And the mother. The mother was shot?
Right?
Was it the mother or the father? No, I thought... Didn't dad die in a forest fire?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. We have to watch this.
I would show that scene, and I would say, who's a Bambi lover here? Because a lot of them were hunters, a lot of them weren't, right? Oh. Boom.
Right?
Yeah, I loved it. I loved that job.
Dance puppets.
Yeah. And I drove home and went, oh. And I would never say my opinion, never. Because my job as an instructor was not to say, this is what I believe, because that's not proper.
Right.
It would be to say... Dare you to think Darwinism. When Darwin, the idea, dare you to think about it, right? So let's talk about it. Oh, man, that was a great job. I'd go home, I got them going good today. You know, they were yelling and scrapping and they were doing the fist fights.
Dear Diary, jackpot.
Bambi killers and seal crushers and dinners all.
All of that there. Last week... We talked about Bronze Age Scandinavians crossing massive distances on water on large canoes.
Yeah, pre-Viking.
Yeah. Well, now, small remote islands were long thought to have been last frontiers of pristine natural systems. Humans are not thought to have been able to reach or inhabit environments prior to the dawn of agriculture and technological shift that accompanied this transition. A new evidence shows that hunter-gatherers were crossing at least 100 kilometers of open water to reach the Mediterranean island of Malta 8,500 years ago. 1,000 years before the first farmers. Now, this is pretty neat because they start getting into the archaeological bits of it.
Yep.
Not just the actual paddling and everything like that. Document reports the oldest true long-distance seafaring in the Mediterranean before the inventions of boats with sails, an astonishing feat for hunter-gatherers likely using simple dugout canoes.
Hmm.
Because, I mean, we always talked about, you know, that was how canoeing came about, was they had to, everybody sort of had their same idea of a dugout canoe out of a log. And a lot of times you think about that, well, they're going down the river or they're going out in a small lake. But they're now coming up with all this evidence that they are using these dugout canoes And I would sort of say along the lines like the old Voyageur canoes.
Yeah.
But a primitive.
They transited great distances.
Great, massive distances, so big water.
Were these guys about the same time as, so last week you talked about Scandinavia.
8500, so this would have been before that.
So this is.
Or no, sorry. Bronze Age would have been before that. And I think about the same period.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, this is before carbon fiber.
Long before carbon fiber.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Relying on sea surface currents and prevailing winds, as well as the use of landmarks, stars, and other wayfinding practices. This is 8,500 years ago.
That's incredible, eh?
8,500 years ago. A crossing of about 100 kilometers is likely, with a speed of about 4 kilometers per hour. Even on the longest day of the year, these seafarers would have had over several hours of darkness on open water. So this is Professor Nicholas Vela of the University of Malta. Discoveries were made by a scientific consortium led by Professor Eleanor Scarry of Max Planck Institute of Geoanthropology.
There you go.
As these big words we throw in here every so often. At the cave site of Latinja, in the northern, I don't even what region of Malta.
You didn't practice your words.
I didn't practice that word. The researcher, we've had to get into this because we're doing all this world stuff now. And these big, massive names and words come in. So I have to do the little phonetic spellings on all my notes.
We failed to do this
one. We failed to do it on this one. Researchers found traces of humans in the form of their stone tools, hearths, and cooked food waste. They found abundant evidence for a range of wild animals, including red deer, long thought to have gone extinct by this point in time. They were hunting and cooking these deer alongside tortoises and birds, including some that were extremely large and extinct today. So they're thinking things like, oh yeah, you know, sailors came and killed off all the dodos. Well, these, and then they're thinking, well, these animals were extinct long before because people couldn't get to these islands. Well, it turns out people were going to these islands. And it, because they figured, well, once the farmers and stuff were able with their big boats and sailing boats and stuff to get to these islands, well, none of these creatures inhabited the islands anymore. But like I said, all the people with their canoes thousands of years beforehand went in and wiped them all out. So, yeah.
So were they double bladers or single bladers? That's the big question.
Oh, they were all single bladers. It's a known fact.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't approve of double blading. It's in cave paintings. I think there's one guy with a double blade, and the rest of them were beating him to death with a single blades. In addition to this, a team of researchers found clear evidence for this exploitation of marine resources, found remains of seals, various fish, including grouper, and thousands of edible marine gastropods, crabs, and sea urchins, all indisputably cooked.
Hmm.
Discoveries also raise questions about the extinction of endemic animals on Malta and other small and remote Mediterranean islands, and whether distant Mesolithic communities may have been linked through seafaring. So I think they're starting to figure out that these big, long seafaring canoes have been around a lot longer than they originally thought, and not just in one or two places.
It's amazing how much we're learning just in the last few years. Like, it seems there's a new discovery every few days, something major, something historical. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty amazing how fast it's all rolling in now. Because we're experiencing more and more of our world. Well, we're designing better and newer and better tools to scan from space and so on, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just a couple of years back that about Wisconsin, the canoes they found in the lake there,
exactly.
Right?
Now they're up to 47 or something.
And now they're falling all over the world. They're finding all these canoes that have been, you know, thousands of years old now that have, and they say results add to 1,000 years to Maltese prehistory and force a reevaluation of the seafaring abilities of Europe's last hunter-gatherers, as well as their connections to ecosystem impacts.
Huh.
So, extinctions because of canoeists.
Yes, exactly.
Apparently.
Yeah.
from 8,500 years ago. That's what I get from this.
You learn so much. The other day, I went to a grocery store, and they had wild boar.
Yeah.
Wild boar from Quebec. And so I got it because it was Canadian. I said, Christine, I got some wild boar. It's on sale. It's from Quebec. And I learned it tastes terrible.
Was it on sale?
It was on sale, and it looked like leather. It literally did look like leather. And then I looked into wild boar. I guess it's an invasive species, yeah. And everybody's trying to get rid of it. Yeah, because nobody wants to eat it because it tastes like crap.
Well, that's a big problem down the states, too, in southern states, is the birds. I think Texas.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those.
Some of the southern states, there's bounties on them. And yeah. I think you just have to bring in a tail or a piece of hide or something to get the bounty on them. But yeah, it's common because they breed so prolifically that it's...
And they destroy everything.
Yeah. They destroy crops and injure farm animals and so on.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I had bison a number of years ago, and I ate it.
Bison's good.
Tasted like liver. Oh, yeah. I hate liver.
Well, see, the thing with bison and with a lot of meat, and I a lot of people kind of misunderstand where a lot of the flavor comes from is the fat, right? So a nice steak, it's nice with a chunk of fat. And when you smoke the meat, mm-hmm. the fat adds a lot of flavors. Bison is very lean meat.
Yeah. Well, it's like elk.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, a lot of them cut it up with different meat. And same with moose.
Yeah.
But unless you, if you know how to prepare moose properly.
Oh, yeah. Or bear so or whatever.
Good.
Yeah.
So good. Anyway, we talked about turkey hunting last week from a kayak. This week it's all about wild game.
Who's going to be yelling at us?
Yeah, way to go, Kevin. You started this.
Well, it's funny, too, because I brought the boar home, but also I got bison because it was also on sale. And it's funny you said that. And it's still in the freezer because Christine goes, okay, you're not allowed to go out anymore and go shopping.
See?
So bringing back like this weird stuff that we'll never eat. But it was Canadian. It was on sale.
There you go.
Sean told me to get it. You're not allowed to hang out with Sean anymore. Here's one that's we talked about doing something like this. Would be really cool when we back with.
We've done a few discussions about this.
John Van Berger was actually, before COVID hit, was talking about doing something like this. After 4 years and 49 states, Wendy Norcross and her husband, Frank Wattenen of Ely, Minnesota, dipped their purple canoe into the waters of Kauai. I'm just blanking on that one. Today, to completely a heartfelt mission, they launched their 50th and final paddle out into the Hanalei River to complete a journey to float water in all 50 states, in honor of Norcross parents, both of whom died from dementia, and they did it while raising awareness for the Alzheimer's Association. So they've paddled in all 50 states in 4 years.
That's incredible.
Wouldn't that be great? See, you should do that, Kevin.
Yes.
Just go paddle in all...
Start with Canada. All the... yeah. Have you been to all provinces, Kevin? And territories?
I haven't paddled all provinces. Well, no, wait a minute. Have I? Paddle Newfoundland, paddle Nova Scotia, paddle PEI, paddle Quebec, paddle Ontario, paddle Saskatchewan. You know what? I not paddle BC. No? Where's that loop that you do in the mountains? That's in BC.
Is part of it not going to BC?
Okanagan?
Yeah.
That's BC.
Yeah.
You know what? I have paddled in every province.
New Brunswick?
Yeah.
What about territories?
Where's my badge? I need a badge.
What about the territories?
Oh, shoot, no. Sorry.
See, I don't have you don't get the badge till it's all done.
No, well, I need money for that.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah. I remember speaking at the Wilderness Symposium, and it was very controversial because they didn't really – the guy running the show at the time didn't want me to speak because I didn't go to the far north. But people wanted me to speak. And the first thing I said is like, well, I don't go to the far north for two reasons. One is I like, you know, blue water and pine and trout. And the other is I have no money.
Well, I look at some of the photos of the audience at some of these shows. And yeah, like you say, they, oh, I've gone to the Yukon and I've gone here. I've got, you know, and I'm just like, yeah, but like, yeah, you look, you're really old. You've living off your year's supply of money you've saved up. You've actually got some money, you know, you got two coins to rub together.
Yeah, yeah.
Unlike the rest of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got the whole thing. I'm not knocking this at all, but it is the truth. When I do presentations, if I have someone come up to me, I can see them coming a mile away. I've done the Nahone. Have you done the Nahone, Kevin? Have you done the copper mine? I went, no, I haven't, because I have no money. I would love to, and I think it's fantastic you did, but I did Algonquin, I did Killarney, I did Temagami, Algoma, and Passaway with Andy. That probably we could have went to the Nahone for that price. But, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, just let it go. It's almost like going to Everest. Like I did Everest. Well, how many other mountains did you do?
Oh yeah.
I
spent $125,000 and I did Everest Base Camp.
So Kevin, now that your book is out and doing fabulously well and you've got spare time on your hand, why don't you look into this business idea? Because you know the rest of us, you know, still aren't living off their laurels here.
You son of a
rent a canoe partner. So if you don't have anybody to go to the Nahone, the copper mine, anything with, there's a list of people with all their qualifications. You pay them to come with you.
Or they pay Kevin to take them.
No. So somebody would pay Kevin all his expenses.
Yeah.
So Kevin gets a free trip out of the deal.
Oh.
He's just got to show up and paddle. Yep.
You forget the one thing is I go in the wilderness for solace.
Well, you're not taking 50 people. You're going to take one person.
No, you are the one person that gets taken.
No, I've guided before. I'd love guiding. In fact, I'm guiding this year. I'm doing the that trip through Lake Superior Adventures.
Yeah.
And 10 people, it sold out in a week. 10 people are in a Voyageur canoe with me. We go up to Denison Falls where Bill Mason filmed and painted. And yeah, that was great because it's a job. And also, you know, lovely people. And when I got it, I met some amazing people. But then all of a sudden I had this epiphany like, oh, well, get a paycheck at the end of that. And I'll meet some incredible people. I know that. But I'm also stuck in a Voyageur canoe with these people.
Right.
Oh, my
but,
God.
But with my idea, you're not guiding.
Yes, exactly.
You're just accompanying somebody because they had nobody to go with. So basically, you're like human luggage. And they're paying you to be their paddle partner.
Banks That's Island. It. Sean's going to take it to Banks Island.
Yeah, when I get 20 grand. See, it's a great job.
I spent a career taking youth at risk out, and I love being with them. But
you don't
want to be
adults at risk?
Here's the thing. So I wrote a piece for Explore Magazine. It would be out in the summer. And the 10 ultimate pieces of camp gear that you really don't need but you'll bring. And I listed, you know, the camp pillow and so that. My last one was a canoe partner because you really don't need them.
Just make sure Christine doesn't see that episode. Oh, you're back thinking that one now, aren't you?
No. She knows me. I love my solo trips. In fact, actually, when all this book stuff went on, she goes, okay, when are you going on your solo trip? You need to get out and re-energize. So I love people. I love being out in the woods with them. I love guiding at the time, love taking youth out. But I got to say, going out on my own and just soaking up the solitude, maybe with my dog. I would have a hard time doing all that other stuff you're talking about.
Other stuff. Well, if you ever want to go to the copper mine, all you got to do is find somebody that's willing to pay all your expenses, and all you have to do is show up and paddle.
Yeah, there you go.
I wouldn't do that. No.
Just keep your mouth shut and paddle.
No.
And enjoy your time out there. If they try to ask you a question, just go, yep. I'm luggage only.
I'm on vacation.
I'd rather go down the Nipissing in Algonquin with my own or with my buddies before I would ever do the copper mine with some stranger that's just paying me. Big time. Never.
Well, I will prostitute myself out for that. Anyway, back to what we're talking about here. Norcross and Watanen were joined on their cruise on the Hanalei River by local families impacted by Alzheimer's, including retired Maui firefighter and outrigger paddler Jim Kimo Knutson, who now calls Kauai home and lives with younger onset Alzheimer's. Event was hosted by Hanalei Canoe Club. Inspiring Journey is part of the Longest Day, an Alzheimer's Association initiative encouraging people to turn their passion into action to bolster Alzheimer's care and support and research. Wendy and Frank's journey is filled with love, courage, lots of aloha and purpose, says Alzheimer's Association Hawaii Executive Director L.J. Duanis. They're reminding us that we are all connected in this fight to end Alzheimer's. So 50 states in 4 years.
That's incredible, eh?
Raising awareness for Alzheimer's. Yeah. That'd be cool to paddle that much.
Good for them. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. Have a purpose in life and make it happen. Yeah. Right.
So they did. I've been watching all the socials lately, and I know it is the time of year. Everybody's getting that spring fever. They want to get out there. And there's been a lot of posts lately for people going on canoe trips and paddling and, you know, and they're, you know, up on the ice and going through the ice and everything, paddling. And yeah, I mean, you know, people had enough of winter. They're trying to get a head start on summer. You have to remember that just because the ice is gone, the water has not magically heated up to summertime temperatures. If you're heading out for a paddle without a dry suit, which I'm seeing everybody.
Sure. And you know, we're not here to shame people, but.
I don't want to shame them or preach or anything like that.
But you need to take precautions. You need to take precautions.
Make sure you stay close to shore. Make sure you're in a group. And have spare clothes in a dry bag so you can change if there's a capsize. Ability to start a fire to warm up. Safety gear in case something happens. Cold water shock, which can cause dangerous breathing and heart rate changes, can occur within the first minute of immersion. Loss of muscle control, making self-rescue difficult, can happen within 10 minutes. And this is the time of year.
Yes.
There's already articles in the paper and in the Google. All you got to do is Google it.
There's still snow in the woods. Already, there's still ice on some cold bays. And so you just have to be careful. Stay close to shore. Don't do major crossings unless you're in a dry suit. And you have to be cautious. You have to be prepared to save yourself. Because in the time that it takes for hypothermia to set in, it's not enough time for somebody to mount a rescue. So you have to be prepared to rescue yourself, especially in these cold conditions.
I know, Kevin, that you've been asked to go on a paddle trip lately and said, no, you're not. You don't do the dry suit thing. And
no, I can't afford a dry suit or a wetsuit. They're like really expensive. And actually, I don't see that because it's like, gosh, I have no money. Don't be a Canadian writer. Write a kid's book. But I have the money for that. So I thought, well, we're only going to use it for a week or two per spring or fall, whatever. No. So, like, my mom would always tell me when I was a kid, just didn't be stupid. She was Scottish, right? Well, she is Scottish. She's like, just didn't be stupid. And, yeah, that's really just didn't be stupid about it. And, yeah, buddy of mine, he was, you know, trout season is going to open soon, but also some of the lakes are open for trout because they're all season because they're stock lakes.
Yep.
And he goes, we should go into that lake. And I went, well, I can't go for two reasons. One is the weather's going to be crap. I looked at the weather. I said, this is going to be crap. And the ice is just going to be out. And, you know, I don't want to be out there because it's going to be cold and miserable. But the other is I don't want to videotape that.
Right.
And he goes, what do you mean? I went, it's very important for me to tell everybody that does videos and does media. And people will, there's some people that still despise me for saying this. But if you have an audience, especially a young audience, it is your obligation to be ethical and show them what you're doing is proper. And other people will say, I don't care, man. I don't care. I'm not going to wear a PFD. That's my choice. No, it's not your choice once you get an audience. It is not your choice. It is your obligation to be a representative of safety.
Yep.
And for me to go off, and yeah, I did do stuff. I went down rivers and ice floes and stuff like that when I was a kid, and we're idiots, and we did all that. And you do one mistake once, and you learn from it. If you do it a second time, you're an idiot, right? So you can do – everybody can do whatever they want. But when someone has to rescue you, think about that.
Yeah, especially think this time it. Of year. There was a couple people have been rescued already this year. Somebody's passed away because they couldn't get rescued in time.
Yeah, here on Lake Ontario. Yeah.
And on Lake Ontario. You know, just because the water's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's still below freezing.
Yeah, right? But it's exciting now, though, isn't it? I mean, we're really the lake North area just opened up. I just wanted to go so badly, and I get that. I get that whole excitement. I really do. I remember as a kid, I haven't told this story to anybody, but ever. I remember I used to make little boats out of pieces of wood, and in the early flush, I used to put them down a local creek and watch them. That was my entertainment. I was a lonely kid. I know friends, but anyway, I did that, but I fell through the ice in the creek, and I went up to my waist, and I went, oh, it's really cold. And I ran home, put all the clothes in my dryer, the dryer, and my mom caught me. What are you doing? Nothing. Nothing. So you were stupid, weren't you? No.
I'd like to plead the fifth.
Oh, I was just having fun, Mom. Just being a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I mean, I'll fully admit I've done stupid things.
Oh, yeah. We all have.
I do have a dry suit, by the way, if you want to borrow it.
I'll
rent it to you.
Sean farts in it.
It will smell of armpit, juice, and toots.
Matter of fact.
But they came with that. You know what? I got my dry suit a couple years ago purely on, I wouldn't say a whim.
No.
A windfall.
You were planning, yeah, so there's a windfall, yeah. Plus you're planning on doing 12 months of paddling.
Which I've done.
Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I had enough money just plopped on my desk one day, and oh, that's exactly enough for a new dry suit. Because otherwise, yeah, I was the same. They are just too expensive.
Yes.
And had I left that money sitting there a little while longer, I probably wouldn't own a dry suit today. A 100 other things to spend that money on. But it has definitely let me go, paddling 365 days a year.
Yep.
And be warm. And, yeah, in beginning of January, I was standing up to my waist in Lake Ontario.
Yeah.
And warm and snug as a bug in a rug.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if I'd gone out without that on, and there's no way I'm even trying to touch that water.
Yeah, I would never do it either. It's not worth the risk.
There's no way. Like I said, you just got to think about what you're doing. If you're going, make sure you're going with people that can help you get out. And warm ASAP because, you know, it's not going to end well.
I remember what it was a couple years back. It was June, July. I was doing practice rolls. I went down to one of the beaches here on Lake Ontario, and I thought, oh, I'm going to practice my rolls with my whitewater kayak. And so I got out there. I did one, and then I was standing in the water afterwards. I failed the roll. And so I popped out, and I was standing there, and my legs were just aching, and my ankles were so cold. It's like, what is wrong with this water? It should be warmer now. Like, standing on the beach, it's hot.
Yep.
But in the water, it was only about 12 degrees.
Yeah.
It takes a long time for Lake Ontario to warm up. Like, it's not till mid-July that you have the lake roll over and you get, like, 20-degree water.
Yeah,
So think about that in the spring with ice still in the water. Woo!
Yeah, yeah. Not doing that a 15th time.
No.
And think of the shrinkage. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, it's embarrassing. Stacking dimes, I was in the pool. Oh, that was Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
One last thing here. In Toronto, downtown, Douglas Copeland, a Canadian artist, made the bright red Tom Thompson's Canoe in 2008, an homage to the Group of Seven artist Tom Thompson, who, as we all know, died in a canoeing accident, in quotes, at age 39 in 1917. Well, he made this big red canoe, and you can see it right downtown Toronto. It's part of this park, public art installation. It was destroyed by fire.
Yes. How suspicious.
Suspicious. According to Toronto Police report posted on social media at approximately 2:42 a.m., officers responded to a fire at Canoe Landing Park near Fort York Boulevard and Dan Leckie Way. The iconic red canoe was found engulfed in flames and unfortunately was destroyed. Copeland says, at the moment, we don't know if it was arson. We know it was arson, but we don't know its motive. Art is always a lightning rod. Was it political? Who's to say?
Mm-hmm. Somebody thought they were camping and tried to have a campfire. Oops.
Well, that was one of the very first things that came out, was there was a homeless person trying to have a campfire in it and burned the canoe down.
Yeah.
Well, ironic.
Yeah.
The artist says he's been touched by the outpouring of public support and is optimistic his canoe will be recreated. Ching.
Yeah.
Only the sculpture's steel frame remains, with the majority of its resin body completely incinerated by fire. Have you ever seen it, Kevin?
No, I have no clue what you're talking about, actually. This is really intriguing.
Yeah, right downtown. You can see it right from the Gardner. Used to be able to see it. It was a big red canoe. There's a big park down there, and the big red canoe. And you could go in there, and you could sit in there, that sort of deal. Apparently, there was other things from posts on the socials that were made. There was other things happening at night in those canoes.
Oh, making love in a canoe?
Canoodling.
Could be.
Yeah. Yes. Somebody also walking by and saw others canoodling. So it was a well-used and enjoyed canoe. Canoe landing.
Derek, yes. Have you canoodled?
No, I never have canoodled.
He's a non-canoodler.
I'd have to take the seats out.
Even solo? Have you canoodled solo?
Whoa.
I don't think we have the fifth that you complete up here, Derek.
Have you ever had like three people in the canoe?
A canoe threesome?
Kevin's trying to find out where the limits are.
I know.
This is where they, like, this is a mistake to have Kevin on for the very end.
It's getting late.
It's getting late, yeah. Canoe Landing Park, a privately funded urban park in downtown Toronto, was built on former railway lands at the historic Fort York area, opened in 2009. It was designed by the Vancouver-based landscape architects PFS Studio, in collaboration with the Toronto-based firm, the Planning Partnership of Toronto, the public art consultant Karen Mills and Copeland. In addition to the Tom Thompson canoe, which was large enough for people to stand in, and a popular setting for selfies, and looking out over the Gardner Expressway to Lake Ontario, the neighborhood's public art installations include a colorful display of large fishing bobbers and a sculptural beaver dam. See, it's all nature-y out there. According to the Toronto Downtown West Business Improvement Association website, Copeland's now destroyed initial installation was a civic landmark, viewed by millions of motorists traveling the Gardner Expressway and walking in and around Canoe Landing Park. Douglas Copeland's startling red canoe serves as a symbolic entrance marker to the heart of downtown Toronto. No longer.
Wow, that's sad, because I did get paid years ago from a major magazine cover article about making love in the canoe, and I had to do research. I interviewed many, many people about what is the best position for that, and it was over the thwart.
Really?
Yes.
So there has been a public study, is what you're saying.
There was a public study, actually. I even asked kayakers, and they said, why are you even asking us? Like,
so did you, like, publish a paper? Like, did you get a doctorate or something for that study?
I didn't get a doctorate.
Did you get a government grant?
No, I got a cover magazine article. I got paid good money for it. And actually, that took me a month to – I asked – all these people
that
on the street.
That took me a bragger.
It was a very slow progress.
Yeah. Part two of the article comes out. Wow.
Yeah, but no, over the thwart was the desired position.
Really?
For making love in a canoe, yeah.
Huh. Hang on, I'm just going to write this down.
I'm taking notes.
Wait a minute. What if it was a solo canoe? No comment.
I won't even talk about single blade and double blade right now.
It's going downhill really fast. And picking up speed. You got anything else, Derek?
I don't. I'm looking at pictures of the bird out canoe right now. I went to Google Maps, and shows that they have pictures of the canoe burned out, plus pictures of it in pristine condition, in the snow and the rain. And
huh.
But yeah.
Yeah, it was quite the canoe. So this canoodling study, it's in magazines, can be Googled, if anybody wants the information.
Yeah, it was Explore Magazine before it was Explore Magazine. I think the magazine was called Canada Outdoors. I'm talking early 90s. But the cover image is a very sexy couple on the beach with a canoe beside them.
Oh, so you're talking like the late 1900s.
Yeah, no, that was a long time ago. That was when magazines were... In fact, it won a magazine award, actually, the magazine awards, and Rick Mercer was the host of that award.
Really?
Oh.
In fact, I won money for that, for running that, and actually, it was James Raffin, going back to James Raffin. He said, what are you going to do with the money? I got $1,000. And I go, I'm going to build a fence because I don't like my neighbor. And Globe Mail was there. Actually, Margaret, I was there for that too. Anyway, they wrote that down and they put it in the next day. Was Kevin Callan won so and so award? It's a true story. I haven't told it. And I went to put the money towards the fence, right? And because my neighbor, and they found that funny. My neighbor came over and he goes, "I read your piece." And that's true. That's not even. And then I said, "Oh, it's just the other neighbor."
You live in a corner, Kevin.
I built a fence, and actually, who helped me was my other neighbor across the road. Was actually Ashley with Speedo Man. That's how I got to meet him. He came over and helped me with the fence, and then him and I went canoeing, and they wore Speedo, and yeah.
You read an article about canoodling. And then you got a guy that wears nothing but a Speedo. He was looking for pointers, wasn't he?
I got nothing on that.
Here's my notes. Go to down, Ashley. nothing more, Kevin?
I got lost. You can't make my life up, but no, we're good for the night yet.
All right. Again, A Spark of Courage, written by Kevin Callan, illustrated by Cliff McCardle. Go buy that book. Buy lots of them. Pass them off to every little kid you know. We should, and you know what? Buy an extra copy. It's only $20.
Yeah.
Pass it off to a local library, school libraries and stuff.
I think your publisher's doing that, aren't they, Kevin?
Libraries will love this. Schools will love this.
Yeah.
And my past colleagues I've worked with are loving it. They're like, "Oh, Kevin, this is amazing."
Yeah.
And they know me. They know my weirdness. You guys, have you ever had this? What if I go in the grave tomorrow, right? That's sad to say, but let's say.
It means I don't have to go to work tomorrow.
Well, that's true. That's true. But have you ever lived your life where you want to do something if you go in the grave? And you know, you got to live your life like that. Like, do something now because you might be done tomorrow.
Yeah, right? But see, I plan to live to be over 100. Just because I can. And to piss everybody off.
Oh, what's really funny, what's going on now, is like, so I went to my banker, and of course my mom's family lives forever. I mean, my mom's like 92, living on her own. Like, and then so I look like her. I had the jeans, and my banker goes, yeah, you're going to be your mom. But that's a bad thing because you have no money. So you'll have no money for a long, long time, Kevin.
It's been working for you so far.
Oh, man. But it's one of those things where, live the day. You never know what's going to happen the next day. And, make sure you make love in a canoe is what we're saying.
Right? Pitter-patter, buddy.
Yes.
Wait till the warmer weather because
yes, absolutely.
I got to think it's got to be hard to make love in a canoe when you're wearing, like, a dry suit.
At least you have protection.
Right?
Yeah.
Full body. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. Again, a big thank you, Kevin Callan, for showing up and partaking in tonight's fun activities and telling us all about your brand new book.
Yes, and be safe out there, everybody.
I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.